how's it hanging, everybody? Welcome back to Tag Team, the Pokemon trading card games premier podcasting trio. My name is Riley Holbert, joined as always by my good friends, Mr. Andrew Mahone and Mr. JV Creewall. Guys, how's it going today?
I'm doing well, better than I was this past weekend. Had a little bit of a rough weekend, unfortunately, with I have a chronic pain condition. It really flared up. I wasn't able to actually participate in Vancouver. But I did end up having a decent trip overall. If you want to hear more about that, you can check out my stream VOD today where I kind of talk about all of it. But as a highlight from the weekend, I did get to go skateboarding in Vancouver. Ooh. And I visited a skate plaza that I saw in passing last year when I went to the event and got to skate there. The hotel
I stayed
at.
Isn't there like a serious like skating scene in Vancouver?
Or am there I is, yes. No, yeah, there is. I met a fellow, Ivo, there, who moved to Vancouver from the Czech Republic just on a working visa to skate for a year.
That's
and he
awesome.
Knows nobody.
A work visa?
Yeah, work visa. Yeah. For a year.
To skate.
To
That's
skateboard.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, so he's just working a job and skating in Vancouver for a year.
JW's gears are literally turning in front of us.
No. I thought, okay, I misunderstood that you were saying he moved there on a work visa to skate.
Yes.
But he moved there. He got a work visa.
With the purpose of being able to skate.
And then, yeah. Right,
yes.
Okay.
Because apparently, as he tells it, the Czech Republic is not great for street skating, but in mm-hmm. Vancouver, it's much better. So he has aspirations. He's 20 years old. He has aspirations to be this, like, you know, this skateboarder. So he's just shipping out and living the life. And now just,
That's
like,
awesome.
meeting people while skating, of which I was one. He came Hell up yeah. to me. He was so friendly that I was like, he must play Pokemon cards or something, because he just came up to me while I was skating there alone and was just like, hey, man, how you doing? And I was like, hi, you know,
organic I'm connection good. With people. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. And he's like, hi, I'm Ivo. Who are you? You know, and it was really cool. We got to skate together and, you know, we filmed each other doing tricks. It was just a really good time. It was fun.
Dude, were you in his skate clip? What do they call it?
I filmed a thing of him doing a trick for his, like, Instagram story, and, like, I filmed us skating together, and we also got to play a game of skate, which I haven't played a game of skate in about 8 years, and for those of you who don't know, it is like horse in basketball, where, like, I do a trick, then you need to do the trick, or else you get a letter, and then if you spell skate, you lose.
I got a question. How many tricks are there?
Oh, there
that
are
you can do.
A lot that I
Insane
can do?
Insane question.
Like, well, no, not that. I mean, I'm sure that you can do many, but how many tricks are there? Like, I know an ollie, I know a kickflip,
hundreds.
Well, the thing is, like, all those tricks, like, many of them have variations, yeah. Right? For like how many times you rotate.
Okay, Riley, you sound like some skater.
This is basic
bro.
Skater
like,
knowledge, bro.
You sound like you created Thrasher level. Magazine.
No, he sounds like he maybe has played Tony Hawk Pro Skater, which is all you need to know.
Or I have a really good friend who's, like, super into skating and talks about it sometimes.
Yes.
So, like, can you do, like, a 1080?
Yes, that is possible on a skateboard. Yes, it's been done.
Well, like, in skate, did you do it?
No, JW.
I'm just trying to gauge how good you are, super genuine right now first of all, and like how, because if you can do a 1080, then presumably you could do a 360.
I can do a 360. Yes.
Logical trappings follow,
but a 1080, that's like much more than a 360. Yeah. that's like three times more than a 360. Listen, for a 35-year-old, I still got my trays down, okay? And that's big. To still be able to 360 flip at my age, like, that's solid. So. You don't have to know what that is, JW. It's okay.
Should we
just nod
and
smile? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Old Man Skaters Over 30 Award. Yeah.
What about you, JW? What you been up to, man?
I mean, we just had some of the most unhinged content ideas. But the second most unhinged content idea, just before the cast, the gambling application for Pokemon cards. Imagine you could bet on your favorite players or the archetype that you expect to win and win real money for that.
Or win in-game credits, which could then be exchanged.
Actually, right. Because you need to have 1 degree of separation. So you buy the credits, and you're only gambling with the credits. You're not actually gambling with money. So
it's allowed.
You know, I just feel like gambling is becoming more and more mainstream. So what if we took it to the niche of, like, esports? Right? Do we have an esports gambling?
There's definitely generic esports
for gambling. League of Legends.
But I feel like Pokemon
doesn't
really fall in that
Pokemon, Magic, yeah. Yu-Gi-Oh. You could expand it to all the major card games, you know, pseudo esports, if you will. But I don't know. Seems like a great idea. I'm just trying to figure out how to market it to the youth.
So write us in, folks. Please find us on Twitter, Tag Team Pokemon. And let us know how you would promote a gambling app for children.
So this all started off as us discussing about, you know, how toxic sports betting has become, you know, in society. And
how much
like
we hate it and how horrible
but
it
we
is.
Realize there's a really great market niche that has yet to be tapped.
It basically is like an Always Sunny in Philadelphia type of conversation where it's like, you know, it starts out somewhat real and somewhat true, and then it just devolves into mayhem and chaos, and in fact the opposite of what we were initially discussing.
Really, it's kind of messed up. I mean, the breadth of like advertising for sports betting now, and that was kind of like something that we were talking about as well, is just, it's absurd considering it's something that is addictive, right? I mean, and we know it to be addictive, just like, and it can be destructive as well on your life, your relationships, all of that.
Or you can win a lot of money.
I mean, we don't see advertisements for like cigarettes anymore because that stuff's been outlawed and regulated, but there used to be, and then there became this kind of awakening to like, hey, we, you know, this is bad. The kids are getting into it. They're, you know, killing themselves with it. It's, you know, it's bad, right? You know, at what point is sports betting, will it ever get to that point as well? With the amount of advertising, and I'm sure there's lobbyists and all that making sure to keep sure that this stuff is legal so that they can keep raking in that money. But then, you know, JW is like, okay, well, you know, listen, if it's going to be legal, we might as well be cashing in. How do
That's
we
right.
do this?
Yeah.
You know,
well, how hard could it be? You just write one app, you collect a little bit of money. I don't know what the regulation is, though. That's where things go.
You would need
to read
probably
some have to
of
be
that.
A little
That's
bit more.
Tough.
It'd have to be a little bit more underground. It'd have to be a little bit more grunge, kind of neat, you know, kind of not
mainstream. Like a black market Pokemon gambling app.
Right, right. Yes, exactly that.
Yeah. For kids.
So yeah, I mean, if
you
this
have to
ever
be 18
does
to make
appear,
an account, all right? You have to be 18.
You enter your birthday and you got to be over 21.
Yeah, you definitely have to. That's so true. That's so true. I don't know. If this does ever come out, I didn't produce it. I just want to make that entirely clear that if something like this were to be made, it wouldn't have been made by me.
Yeah,
if
for
it
legal
were
reasons.
Here on the App Store, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you don't know for anything about
reasons. It. Yeah, we have no association with any
so
of it.
So then we were saying, like, okay, at first our thought was, the Pokemon company would blacklist us immediately and, you know, and shut us down. But then I had this revelation that Pokemon's entire business model is created, you know, is modeled after gambling. You know, you open a booster pack, do you get a hit, right? That's like gambling light. So then how messed up would it be for them to look down their nose
this
at us?
This is, in fact, more skill-based.
Yeah.
Right? This is more. Yep. This introduces more skill.
How
you
messed up
more
is it
control.
For them to judge us?
Pack openers, this is your chance to win it big.
Okay, but
if this theoretical app were to exist.
Yes. For 1 minute, suspend your disbelief and imagine that leading up to the European International Championships, you could put $100 on what deck you thought would win the event. I don't think that, like, realistically, it's like, okay, betting on players, that gets too messy. There's too much to micromanage there as far as, like, numbers and things like that. And also too much of, like, the potential for somebody to skew it, you know, based off of their own kind of like corrupted, you know, whatever play or something like that.
Intentions, yeah, sure.
And things like that. Right. They put money on themselves and then like, you know, then throw or whatever. Or they put money on somebody and yeah. But if you're just betting on archetypes, like what if I could, what if I could throw 200 on the fact that I think there's going to be a Lugia in top eight or there's going to be two Dino Box in top eight. Like that'd be pretty crazy. But then again, this is all, it's not a good idea. But it's a fun thought exercise.
So I want you all to go to the front page of Play Limitless right now, if you do that for me.
Okay.
Let me know when you're ready.
Oh, we could extend it to the
Play Limitless
to the weekly
or
tournaments?
Limitless TCG.
Play Limitless, yeah, just the,
okay, yeah,
the online tournament. JW, you there? All right,
I'm there.
So you see those six different games?
Uh-huh.
Let's put some money down on which one of these games dies first.
Define dies.
Official support canceled.
All right. This is a good one. All right. So for those of you listening, the six games listed are the Pokemon TCG, the Pokemon video game. Disney. Why are there balloons behind me? Did you guys see that?
I did see that. Must have been some crazy Discord feature. You did like a hand motion.
I did something. I don't know what I did. Anyways, Pokemon TCG, the Pokemon video game, Disney Lorcana, One Piece, Digimon, and Dragon Ball Super. Those are your six. Which one is kicking it first?
That's right.
JW? Couldn't be Pokemon. Man, I like my initial thought was like Lorcana, but then if Disney really wants it to continue,
they can force it. Yeah,
they could. You're right. There's just like no. That's a limitless bucket of money that could be dumped into it. So. Man, I gotta think Digimon, right? Because that was a card game once, and then it died, and then they brought it back. So I don't know. Apparently, it's
Dragon
really
Ball
fun.
Had a card game that died too, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. I would say Digimon though.
Digimon.
Because I think about Dragon Ball, and I'm like, didn't that game already die? And I think about Digimon, and I'm like, didn't that game die too?
So well, what do you think, Andrew?
So JW thinks Digimon. I think you know, we look at these games from our, you know, North American lens, but you got to look at them from an international and specifically a Japanese lens as well. And I mean, tabletop gaming is just incredibly popular in Japan. Games like One Piece, Digimon, Dragon Ball, they all have very, you know, successful existences in Japan. To me, the one that needs to prove itself the most in order to continue is Lorcana, because that is like an American IP, right? And doesn't have like the
gaming
tabletop
culture.
Gaming culture of Japan, you know, to kind of ride on to just continue existing, you know, regardless of international support, like these other games do. These other games could just exist in Japan, and whether or not the international community buys into them, like, they don't really care. They're like, whatever, you know, they'll just downsize and just exist in Japan if they need to. But the fact that they're existing elsewhere is great, and I'm sure they're making a bunch of money off that. For Lorcana, though, and it's had a little bit of a rocky start. I know, like, product has been tough to come by, cards have been expensive, all that. So, I think Lorcana, but then again, Disney might just, like, say whatever, we're just gonna muscle
you,
our
you
way
can put
through.
It on life support as Disney. That's the X factor. I think I fundamentally agree with you that I think Lorcana has had kind of the weakest showing, so to speak, of all the games on this page. I also, ever since Lorcana was revealed, I've always thought it was just a grift, to be honest. I thought it was just 100%. Disney trying to cash in on trading card game. So I think that game's extremely fake, but I think Disney will keep it alive for a little bit longer. They just invested in those like regional promos and all that stuff. I feel like, to me, it's between Dragon Ball and Digimon. I feel like Dragon Ball actually has the less longevity of the two. I think it's a stronger property than Digimon, but there's just less to work with, so to speak. So you like run out of things to logically make cards for, and then what? Like people just get bored. You know, you print your seventh copy of like the same character in a row, and people just be bored of it.
I do think that this is like a really interesting topic. I mean, and we can dive even a little bit deeper since this episode's going to be a little bit of a free-form episode. We have some ideas, some roadmaps of things that we'd like to discuss, but this is a topic that I think is super interesting, and I've talked about on stream before. But you know, what does it take to make a successful card game in today's day and age? Is it possible to create a new card game that transcends time, like what I consider the big three to have, right? Like Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, and Magic the Gathering. Those are the big three. They've been around the longest. They seem to have like the most rooted fan bases and card, you know, prices, just as far as like, you know, the card stability, right? Like their cards, you invest in a Pokemon card, you invest in a Yu-Gi-Oh card, you invest in a Magic card, you expect those prices to remain somewhat stable or to go up over time. You know, Pokemon's probably not dying tomorrow. Magic's probably not dying tomorrow. And Yu-Gi-Oh's probably not dying tomorrow. But if, like, Lorcana were to tank tomorrow, you'd be like, eh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, and that's the thing is, like, so there's, when you have a game that's so rooted in culture, and has time on its side, like those three games, then you bring in investor confidence, right? Like investors who have a lot of money feel more confident investing in cards that are worth a lot of money, and therefore, you know, they continue to be worth a lot of money, right? Because people are willing to spend more money on them, and people with money feel confident spending their money on them, like Logan Paul, for instance, with Pokemon. Do you think that any other game has the potential to reach the echelon that Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, and Magic are on? Is it possible to get into that sphere nowadays?
Well, you know what's a game on the rise right now, actually, is the Star Wars, the new Star Wars game. I was getting my taxes done by noted judge in the Pokemon TCG community, AJ Schumacher, and he was talking to me about how he's running these events, these Star Wars trading card game events, and they are selling out, and just there's a huge player base despite the game being, you know, so fresh and really not, hasn't been out that long. So
I haven't even heard of it.
You know that, I think if you are making a card game, it does seem like the trend is to hop on an existing IP. You had a little bit of, you know, fresh and new takes like with MetaZoo, but that obviously has folded. That was a pandemic era creation, and there's a lot of discourse about the mismanagement of that, you know, original IP. But I think right now, if you need to succeed, you need to take an existing IP and then expand off of that. So where are we in terms of what can exist? And I think, you know, you're taking a good IP in what seems like Star Wars, you're giving it the right amount of card production. From what I heard from him, there's just enough cards that people can get their hands on them, but not enough that there's an overabundance of supply, because you do want, I think, especially early, like some amount of scarcity so that product becomes harder to find, and then it's more, you know, interesting and cool when you do get stuff and you get a little bit more hype about that kind of thing. But yeah, that's one here on the list that we just mentioned that's like I think does actually have some staying power, because you're taking a good IP and you're mixing it with like the, I don't know, middle-aged nerds that have a bunch of money to spend. And
have you seen the cards?
Yeah, they look cool, dude.
No,
they look,
I have not even like heard
of this game.
Yeah, they do, bro. And they have, it's like Pokemon too. They have like alternate. I'm not a Star Wars guy, so I don't really have any skin in the game. But you know, it's not like they're gonna run out of characters. The Star Wars universe is practically endless, especially as they keep making more and more TV shows and movies and things.
Nah,
like
man,
that,
this game's dead. This game's DOA.
No.
Yeah, I'm with Riley on this one. Yeah,
this game's DOA. Straight up.
Absolutely not. You've seen these things, bro. They look terrible.
Yeah, this is unplayable game.
Straight up. I appreciate your optimism, JW, but yeah, man. So, Riley, do you have any opinions?
I mean, all right,
I don't mean to
shut
you down,
about?
JW. I mean, yes, it's certainly.
I get what you're saying.
Popular,
and I think,
like, for Star Wars, so.
I think I agree with, like, all the philosophical points that you made. I think, like, you have to be kind of on an existing space, an existing property that'll get you that starting momentum. I actually think it just might be impossible to break into the level of like the big three. I feel like any new game is burdened by the fact these other games already exist, so to speak. You know, they'll be judged against that framework. If they're too close to the existing games, people will judge them for that. If they're too far, it feels unfamiliar and people don't want to play them. You have to hit this exact sweet spot of like blending old and new. You have to have the right recognizable characters, and the people who want to play trading cards already are playing trading cards. You know, like they're playing Magic already, they're playing Yu-Gi-Oh already, they're playing Pokemon already. Like, so you also have to convince them to pivot completely, so to speak, and not just as their side thing that they do when they're not playing in their main game. So I don't know if it's actually practically possible. When I think of a property that has the most potential, I would think of Dragon Ball and One Piece, because they have huge presence in Japan. And they're just global phenomenons. Like, Dragon Ball is, like, one of the most recognizable properties in the world. You know, Goku is up there with, like, Mario, Pikachu, in my mind, in terms of characters. And One Piece, I think One Piece internationally doesn't have quite the same hit as Goku, but it is a global phenomenon, One Piece. Like, so many people are into it. I know so many people who, like, don't read manga regularly, who read One Piece every single week. And if those games aren't hitting it, like, what is, you know? I feel like they have more of a global reach than something like Star Wars. I don't know. I don't think it's possible.
I happen to be a big hater when it comes to, like, believing in new card games' ability to transcend into the top three. I think that there are the big three, and I think that that's just it. I do think that it's possible for smaller games to just kind of exist in Japan because mm-hmm. they have like a bigger tabletop culture than we do internationally. But for games to kind of transcend international popularity, I think the big three are kind of just it. And I don't know that there's any breaking into it. That being said, my take has kind of evolved a little bit in that, you know, I've had a lot of discussions about this. You know, when you ask the question, what does it mean for a game to be successful, right? I think it's possible to have a game that maybe is successful that only lasts 5 years. And sure. It's like, you know, because was the trading card game meant to last, you know, 100 years? If Pokemon TCG shut down in 5 years... surely we wouldn't say that it was an unsuccessful game. Like, it was a very successful game. At this point, we don't know how long these trading card games will go on, right? We have Magic the Gathering, which is like the blueprint, the longest running one. And we have Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon, which I'm pretty sure came out around the same time. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong. Like, you know, end of the, you know, turn of the century, right around then.
Yeah.
And Magic was like early 90s. So like, they all kind of came out right in the same decade, right? And they came out at a really important time as well, because they kind of came out during that internet boom and like kind of pre-smartphones and all of that, right? So like, they kind of had time.
Only millennials will remember.
They had time to like dig their claws into popular culture before video games kind of like became the it thing. And then there's like the question of like, will trading cards continue to exist despite digital games kind of like taking over a lot of tabletop gaming, kind of finance. I mean, just like as far as like people only have so much money to spend on their hobbies, like, you know, digital gaming is very popular. Will trading card games and tabletop games continue to exist in those spaces? I'm a firm believer of yes, they will. But But I also am a realist and understand how difficult it is to break into that space. Everybody wants a trading card game, but you can't just will it into existence. And you can't just buy, like, you can't just buy it into existence either, which is what I think Lorcano is trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lorcano at least put in the effort to make their cards appealing to look at. Relative to another game that we've talked about in the last 5 minutes.
That's what I'm saying. Bro, this Darth Vader card, man. Like, I don't even...
Doesn't make you feel anything, Andrew?
You can't even make me feel something about this Millennial Falcon. Like, this sucks.
Well, yeah, it's like, I mean, it's like any card. Like, you take any random Pokemon card and you're like, okay, next.
No, but just the overarching design of the cards, even more than just the art.
It's their first set, bro.
No, I'm talking like,
and this is the thing,
the way the cards like are laid out, the way the mechanics that are fitting within them. It's just, I'm looking at this, I'm like, this is literally like the Maple Story card game that was trash. You know,
there was a Maple Story card game.
Yeah, oh, yeah, primarily it was so you would buy the cards and like scan the codes into your game and like unlock stuff.
I think one of the major problems that I'm kind of seeing with the Star Wars card game, just like looking at it, is it looks like all of the art for the Star Wars card game is done by the same person or in the same vein or in the same style. Whereas like some of the charm of Magic the Gathering and Pokemon cards is that the art is done by different artists, right? And they kind of put their own spin on the card. So every time you look at a different card, you're like, oh, that's really unique. That's really cool. Like if one of these Star Wars cards was like a clay creation, right? I'd be like, well, that one's cool. You know, I'd be like, oh, these other ones maybe suck, but I like the Chickawalker made out of clay. Like, you know, like I'd be like, I'd put that in my binder, sure. But I think like the problem with the Star Wars cards is that like if you don't like the art style, then like you don't like any of the cards.
Yeah. So I'm telling you, this layout, it just not does not work.
I know I'm a hater. I know I'm a hater when it comes to this. And I know there are people who are believers. I do have a little bit of history on my side. You look at games like Kaijudo. I remember when every Pokemon player was getting into Kaijudo. It was the big new game. My girlfriend at the time made us buy booster boxes. All right. And now, you know, Kaijudo is super dead. And then there was the... what was the one that was made by the guy who made Magic the Gathering with the... with the pre-constructed decks that you buy and you can't edit your deck.
Weren't you into that one?
Oh, yeah! What was that called? Keyforge?
Yes.
Keyforge.
Yeah. Yeah, and I had Keyforge decks, right? Because I was like, this is kind of novel and cool. Like, I was like, this is the one card game that, like, I can do on the side because I don't have to, like, mull over how to build the deck. I just... Yeah,
you were into
right?
that, dude.
I was. It was fun.
You were into
that. But it died super fast.
Well,
I wasn't
no wonder.
But it died super fast.
Turns out if you have to buy your deck,
and
then they're all pre-constructed.
Right. It was novel. It's like it's the perfect like side game.
It was. And it was novel and fun enough to play. But yeah, at this point, it's like, I kind of just see it for what it is. Like, the games can... And they can be fun. They could be little fun, little flashes in the pan that you just do for a year or two, right? But I don't believe...
Not every game has to be a lifetime commitment.
And that's the thing, right? Not every game has to be a lifetime commitment. I don't believe in these games to transcend in the way that, like, Pokemon, Magic, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Have. But that doesn't mean that they're necessarily unsuccessful. They're just not hitting the big times. Until, I guess, I don't believe that they're going to hit the big time until they prove otherwise. So
I mean, maybe we're in a, like, just to push back and to play devil's advocate a little bit. Like, do you think there is a reason that we're seeing these card games on the up and up? Star Wars, One Piece, Dragon Ball, like, these are, Lorcana, like, these are all established IPs making trading card games roughly in the same time period. So... Is there some kind of,
Let me roll up my freaking sleeves here.
Societal pushback to the digital age that we're seeing right now?
To pick on Lorcana, because it's the easiest one to pick on, because it's Disney. To me, it feels like a very you know, there's some amount of earnestness to it. You know, the art is nice and appealing, but it feels like a knee-jerk response to the absolutely insane explosion of collectibles during the pandemic.
100%.
I think the more recent, like, past 2 years type of thing, where a bunch of card games are blowing up, I think it's like the lagging response to that, right? Because it takes you a year, 2, 3 years to fully develop it after you saw in 2020, 2021 that these things were hand over fist making money. That's what Lorcana feels like to me. That's what the Star Wars one, which is also a Disney property, feels like to me. They live in that.
Bunch of executives in a room were like, hey, why don't we got one of those? Like, looking at Pokemon. whoa, what the heck is going on? Why isn't there a Mickey Mouse card that, you know, Logan Paul has around his neck? This is messed up.
Yeah.
And this is literally the result of that, right?
That's what that feels like to me. I feel like, and that's why I've always kind of said that Lorcana just feels kind of disingenuous to me, is it always felt like that. I don't feel that same way about some of these other card games, like One Piece, Digimon, and Dragon Ball. They feel a little more organic in what they're trying to do. But even then, like, I just think if the original prompt is can you break up into that threshold, that upper echelon of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Pokemon Magic, I think the answer is just no. And I think I agree with Andrew. That's, like, fine. You know? Nothing wrong. Nothing wrong with being worse than three of the biggest gaming properties of all time. You know, not every video game is going to be an Elder Scrolls. You know, not every video game is going to be a Smash Bros. And that's fine.
That's true. We got to lower our expectations, right? And that's going to help me to appreciate the Pokemon video games more than I do if I stop comparing it to Tears of the Kingdom.
What a great game. By the way, I'm playing through that right now.
Tears?
So fun. Yeah.
I think it's the best dang game I've ever played.
Really? Yeah. I mean, that's saying a lot. I don't know.
I really like Tears.
I don't know if it can beat NHL 96, but it's pretty close.
It's up there. It's in my top handful for sure. I mean, there were multiple times I had an experience playing that game, and I was like, it's just like I had this overwhelming, like, sense of wow. It was like, this is the best freaking game I've ever touched, that's for sure.
I'm riding my horse
through the forest and all this stuff. Yeah.
One thing that frustrated me when I played Tears is that they have the same cutscene after you beat every dungeon with just a different person saying the same words. That, like, really annoyed me. And actually did detract from my experience a little bit.
But it makes sense, right? Because
you don't know the order. Beat them in I get any that. Order. But they... I mean, they could have different stories to tell, each of the little dungeon dudes. I don't know. That was, like, that was the weakest part of the game for me. Everything else was really strong. and it's still, like, a top five game of all time for me. But anyway, we're, like, so far off the beaten path at this point. I think we are about the breaking point where we need to thank our sponsor for this week's episode in Manscaped. JW, why don't you tell us a little bit about Manscaped?
Manscaped is a great supporter of the podcast, and they have a ton of grooming products that you should probably get your hands on. Check them out, you know, see what they have to offer. But we have all really enjoyed their boxers. The ear and nose hair trimmer I just used the other day, and
you could probably use it again. Yeah,
can you see him from here, Riley? Yep. Anne's always getting on me about the long ear hair. She always likes to pick them out, and it gets really annoying. And so I love that product. I mean, that's one of the things that I can confidently say has changed my life for the better.
That's good. That's good qualifier on that, man.
Well, hey, I'm just right. I did need to slip that in for the better, but I think it will change your life as well.
Head over to manscaped.com today and place an order for some men's grooming products. My favorite is the Lawnmower 5.0. I also use the nose hair trimmer and the nose and ear hair trimmer myself. Very much enjoy those products. If you go to manscaped.com and use code TAGTEAM, you'll receive 20% off your order and free shipping.
It's one of the best deals around, so you can head on over, like Andrew said. Manscaped.com. Use code TAGTEAM at checkout. Check out some of those great products. Buy one for yourself or a loved one. I know you won't regret it. So head on over to manscaped.com. Code TAGTEAM at checkout. Help support Manscaped and help support the Tag Team podcast.
Want to know, I have some plans brewing, semi-related to the read. I'm thinking, and let me know if I'm crazy for this, I'm thinking of becoming a mustache guy.
Okay.
Thoughts?
Yeah, you did mention this to me last week.
Yeah, well,
the nice thing about a mustache is you could go for it, and then if you need to abort mission, you just can.
Right in that moment, yeah. Well,
no.
I was just thinking the other week, I mean, before I left for my project Go Live, I was like, oh, it'd be so fun if I just, like, had a mustache at Go Live. Like, that'd be so, like, crazy. Then I realized it'd be even crazier if I just had a mustache starting onto my next thing, and then they only ever knew me as the mustache guy, you know? Just really.
Yeah, and then you show up and you're shaved, and they're like, hey, where did Riley go?
Exactly. And I think I can pull it off, too, because I grow a thick beard, so.
Do you think for the bit you would shave your entire head? Just like, you would have the...
And body, the, you know, hairless. Yeah. Like a naked
mole
rat.
Yeah, eyebrows, you know, ear and nose hair, the beard, the mustache, the head.
Just... Now, the real question is, did you pass this one by Jill at all? And what does she think?
Jill actually was anti-mustache, but then I briefly shaved one in before my go live, and then she changed her mind after seeing me with a mustache.
I think if Jill's on board, then I mean, what's stopping you? Yeah.
That's like a one in a million, right? Like when the girlfriend changes her mind when she sees the mustache for the positive. Like,
yeah, I do feel like you either have women that are really into it and know that they are, or are against it. Like it seemed like Jill was, but I've never heard of a conversion story like that. That's really heartwarming.
Yeah. isn't that for real? That's like real love right there. Seriously.
That is real love. Wow.
You know what else
you got
is
a
heartwarming?
Good one, Riley.
What's that, Andrew?
I'm going to be a dad.
Hell yeah, man. Tell us about
what?
It.
What?
Yeah, you got it. I know. But I forgot. I can actually tell people now because I told Twitch chat today. So I'm starting to roll out the information.
Yeah.
So, yes, coming in September, Natalie is pregnant and I'm going to be a father. Joining JW.
What?
Yeah. Joining JW. And the fatherdom, the fatherhood.
Yes, welcome.
So
yes,
very excited
yes.
about that. So I just, you know, I told people on stream today. I'm not really posting about it on social media, but like, yeah.
We do have a tag team event coming up. So on Andrew's channel, there will be a $500 money match between Andrew and JW, and the winner not only gets the money, but also gets to name their child Cletus. They've been debating who gets Cletus for so long now, and we're finally ready to see it through. Best
of
mine.
Yeah, when's the due date?
It's September. But I've talked about how I'm not really going for my Worlds invite this year. This is why, right? I mean, the whole, it doesn't really make sense. Everything's kind of changing for me this year as I prepare to be a first-time father, like, and just not really focused on grinding for Worlds. Even if I did qualify for Worlds, I wouldn't go. Like, my wife
not
is
the right
due
time
in September.
To go. Yeah.
No, my wife's due in September. Imagine me being in Hawaii in August, and Natalie's like going into labor early. Like, just hang on, honey. I'm getting on the plane. I'll be there. Like, no, dude.
Get on the plane. You got rounds to play, buddy.
Rounds to play, bro. Cross your legs. Can you wait a week? Yeah. So, yeah. Just not great, right? So, I made a decision early on that I was not going to be attending Worlds regardless this year. And and I'm happy to be just focusing on starting a family, becoming a father, and doing all that. I think things for me are going to change a little bit, and that I'm not going to be kind of doing this flying around tournament grinding as hard as maybe I did this past year. For me, Worlds 2023 felt very climactic in a lot of ways. I had a really, you know, really awesome season that I was proud of, and I had a good Worlds finish that I was proud of. And now it's like, okay, I kind of had that post-pandemic, like, solid season just to, like, cool, you know, I still got it. Great. I'm going to focus on being a dad now. I'm 35. You know, I'm ready to, like, transition into that.
And the mind kind of slowly declines. So it does make a lot of sense that you're taking a step back from the game, you know, just as you age, as you age mentally.
There's a cognitive decline.
So
I'm still going to. I am still going to.
It's hard to compete at the highest level.
Have you taken a brain age quiz recently?
JW.
Riley had a question, Andrew.
The brain age quiz.
I'm just wondering if you're actually clocking in at 35 or if maybe you're further along that spectrum.
Oh, I love it. But no, I haven't taken it. Could you link that to me? I would love to.
Oh, it's actually a game for your Nintendo DS.
I mean, that sounds like an hour of content, Andrew, that you could stream.
Oh my goodness, the brain. Oh my god. But I do still plan on, like, I'm not quitting tournaments for good. To me, there's no reason, like, what it's draw definitive lines like that. Like, there's no point, right? I mean,
it's actually really easy with. It's really easy with only one kid to go, because, you know, you just peace out for a weekend and, you know, Natalie will just take care of the child.
Man. Yeah. Anyways, I'm not going to be doing a bunch of that, you know? So I'm going to be really focusing on, raising the kid, especially for the first couple, you know, few years. And that doesn't mean that I'm not going to go to events. I just am not going to be on that, like, crazy Worlds grind, you know?
Yeah.
And I've been kind of, like, preparing for this moment mentally for a long time, knowing that this is something that Natalie and I were going to be doing. You know, we did IVF treatment, so, like, I've known this entire season that this was going to be going on. So, like, so mentally I've been taking a step back this entire season as we kind of prepare for this. And, yeah, I just, you know, I'm ready. I'm ready to take that next step in life, and just see how things go from here. You know, competition's fun and all, and I'll always be a competitor at heart. It's something that I love to do, and you know, but I've been making this argument for a long time that, like, you don't have to grind for Worlds in order to be a fan of the Pokemon TCG and in order to get fulfillment out of competing in the Pokemon TCG. I've been making this argument for a long time. And now I'm going to be living it, right, as I go to, like, a handful of events a year and still remain very deeply, you know, involved in the game. But you don't need to be, like, competing for that world championship every single year in order to be, like, a valid competitor. And I don't plan on it, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. Because I think that, and this is something that I've been thinking about for a long time, of just the kind of stunted potential, like, financial benefits that you're missing out on if you're, like, going to all these tournaments and you're spending all this money trying to achieve this invite that, I mean, maybe for you that's worth it. And I think there's, for a lot of people, and certainly for me in some past seasons, it's been worth it to spend that amount of money. But it just, I see some of these players that are attending all these events and grinding locals, and it's like every weekend and every, you know,
and they should be investing that they have into their mutual funds,
and they should be putting that right into the Pokemon TCG gambling app,
where they could be doubling, tripling that money easily,
instead of just barely breaking even, or even worse, losing money. So, if that sounds like you. But I just see it too frequently. I mean, you guys know what I'm talking about. It's like there are these people that you're going to everything. You're spending every dime that you have on this game, which is noble in some ways, but, you know, it doesn't have to be everything. It doesn't have to be every.
I mean, Andrew and I have been having these conversations a lot in the last year, I feel like, because I think both of us have been kind of ready to change the way we approach the game. And I think you kind of have been too, JW, though you ebb and flow a little bit more.
And what do you mean I ebb
and flow? JW needed that last zinger to prove to himself.
You thought that was the last one, bro. You thought that was the last one. Knoxville, top 16. I'm not done. I'm not done, okay? As long as I live and breathe, I am not done.
I know, bro. Okay, I'm just saying, man. you were looking done.
You were having
until
a real
this year.
You were looking
done, bro. That's all I'm saying is that you were looking done.
All I'm saying is when we were going to dinner at NAIC, you were having a little bit of a freaking in your head moment, man. That's all.
Yeah, and you needed that is what I'm saying is you needed that for yourself. What I'm saying is I'm not at the point where I need that for myself anymore. I have proven to myself everything that I need to prove to myself. I've accomplished everything that I feel like I need to accomplish in this game. I'm at peace with it. Anything else that I'm able to accomplish, is great. And hopefully will just be fun, you know, in doing
well, that. And I think that the point that you made about being a valid competitor is regardless of worlds it rings super true for me. You know, I haven't really been chasing my invite this season. I've stayed super invested in the game. Like I watch almost every tournament. I play all the time still. I talk about Pokemon all the time still. But it's been kind of refreshing to like not be at locals every weekend. It's been refreshing to not feel obligated to travel to every single tournament. And honestly, it's a little bit of a weight off my shoulders to not worry about worlds in the first place. You know, like to not put that demon over you of like trying to qualify at every single thing and calculating every point and every avenue to get there. You know, JW and I were talking right before the cast and I was saying that, you know, it doesn't really spark joy in me to grind away at Pokemon. It takes away, if anything, for me, the fun of playing the game, and it takes away the feeling of being a real competitor when I'm playing constantly every weekend. And, you know, for better or worse, like I like to do other stuff too. You know,
like for me, this year has been all about Gym Leader Challenge League. And that's where I'm getting like a lot of my fulfillment from being a competitor, brewing new decks, getting to play really deep, engaging games of Pokemon, building community locally. And our local community has been really incredible when it comes to playing the game, staying involved in the game. And I see, you know, there's all these players here and we all have families and hobbies and other things that we do. Like I go rock climbing with Craig once a week, you know. Craig is my GLC buddy. We have this other healthy hobby that we do and we talk cards while we rock climb, and that's like one of my favorite things ever, right? And it doesn't involve spending like, you know, thousands of dollars to travel across the world to do, you know, all this stuff. That's just not, and that's a really exciting period to be in your life. If that's where you're at, where you're flying across the world to compete for like that top title, world champion, you know, but realistically as a human being, you know, how many years of your life do you have to dedicate to try and be a world champion at something, right? And being a 35-year-old, I got to ask myself that question. Because I started playing the Pokemon TCG competitively when I was about 21, 22. So at this point, I dedicated a fat chunk of my life to that chase, right? And we lost a handful of years.
Your entire adult life.
Yeah, my entire adult life, right? So, like, yeah, we lost a few years there with the pandemic. But, like, other than that, I mean, it was a solid 10 years plus of, like, competing for a world's invite. I'd say like the first few years I wasn't competitive enough to be going for a world's invite, but by 2014 I was going for it, right? I think my first season was like 2012. I was just learning how to play. 2013, you know, I was like a top 8 in my first regional, but I wasn't qualifying for worlds. But by 2014 I was like, we're going for it, and I missed. And then 2015 was the first year I got the worlds. So like, you know, and I'm very happy with the career that I've had and the accomplishments that I've had and the friends that I've made. And I mean, my goodness, just what a blessing it's been on my life. But, you know, you don't want to become like, you don't want to become that guy who loses everything because he is like addicted to the chase, right? Like you can't do that.
I know what you're talking about, man. I saw it all too frequently with music. right? Mm. We have auditions. It's kind of, it feels similar in some ways, right? You're chasing the high. Like for musicians, it's going to an audition and you're trying to get a job. So there's a little more high stakes. But yeah, I always vowed to myself, like, I would never be that, you know, 40, 50 year old who hadn't gotten their break, who's been traveling to everything, that, like, you know, there is a time and place to hang it up, or at least step back a little bit. I mean, hanging it up is a little bit too severe for what you guys are discussing here, but, you know, it's,
well, I think what's maybe there, you know, to kind of bow that is, mm-hmm. you know, there's all sorts of different valid ways to enjoy this. And I think I've said for years, I think people put way too much emphasis on the World Championship itself as a concept in the Pokemon trading card game. There's yep. so many awesome high level events that there's probably one not that far from you, you know? And if that's your one event a year, you know, we saw that even just this past year, you know, you see that every year at like the Portland regional, there's like the Portland crew who only goes to that regional and does nothing else all year. And they like top eight that regional and then screw off for a year. And that's awesome. Like, they probably have a really great time with the game. And if that's your flavor, that's great. If chasing worlds and going to every single event is your flavor, that's great. As long as you're like thoughtfully engaging with that and are like understanding what that means for you. And I don't know. I think we just put way too much of the World Championship on a pedestal, especially in these days. Like, these tournaments are giving out like 10 grand, man. Like, you don't have to go to worlds to make good money. That's for sure.
Every single major event, and that's the way I look at it now, is like every single major event is an opportunity to accomplish something fantastic, right? If I were to top eight another international championship, I wouldn't care if I was going to Worlds. You think I would, if I got a trophy at EUIC this year, that would mean so much more to me than a Worlds invite.
You would get the Worlds invite, though.
Top four?
No, maybe not top four.
No, it's that's top what two. I'm saying. It's top two.
Top two, right. So if I got fourth place, like, it wouldn't matter to me because, I mean, like, I've qualified for Worlds. That's like a, you know. But again, I've already been there, right? So, like, now I'm just looking to enjoy different kinds of relationships with the game. Qualifying for Worlds every year is, like, this sick ride that you just, like, you don't get off unless you make the conscious decision to get off, right? It will just keep you back because the next season starts as soon as
literally the current the season ends. Weekend.
Yeah, like literally the next season starts like before Worlds happens.
Yeah, when you go to your League challenges.
It literally the next season starts before Worlds. So like you already are like, okay, well, if I want to start qualifying for Worlds 2025, I got to start right now, and it's going to be in like July. You know, like NAIC is going to happen in what, like late June or something, early July. And then it's going to be like, all right, well, you know, I'm either going to Worlds in August or I can start grinding for the next season right now. And so the grind literally never stops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we've been talking a lot about stuff that really has nothing to do with the actual present state of the card, which is totally fine. Like, I've been enjoying this episode a lot. I do have one more bet for y'all, though.
Okay.
Andrew, you said it'd be awesome for our new, which may or may not be associated with us, you know, legal reasons, probably not, gambling app. It'd be fun to bet on archetypes.
Yes.
EUIC is in a week and change. If you were to bet on an archetype, what would you bet on? And how much would you be willing to bet on?
I'd be willing to bet.
Well, what's the return? What's the return? I mean, we can't know. We can't sure. know how much we would bet without knowing how much we would receive.
Like, I lose it or I double it. That's what I'm assuming.
Lose it or double it on the metagame is like 20 decks.
I would say, like, so I'm going to make up a bet, a theoretical bet. Like, I would bet my friend, you, JW. Like, if you would challenge me, I'd say, like, I bet...
Okay, like, highest placing deck.
I bet two Snorlax decks will make top eight, you know? And I could say, I'll bet you $200 that would happen. Like, that's about as confident as I would
get. I would take that.
I don't think two Snorlax decks will make top eight.
Yeah, you don't think two Snorlax decks will make top eight? I think one definitely will. I think two is a little bit of a stretch.
You guys heard it here. I did take Andrew's bet for two Snorlax decks in top eight for two.
That is official and legally binding.
Nah, there was not a handshake there. We would have to, yeah. Definitely have
I don't know if hands have to, I don't know if the molecules
hands
in your hands have to touch.
Hands got
to
shake. I was just spitballing, all right? You know, I didn't, you know, I need to think about it a little bit
more. Okay, so you're going to walk it back. So you're going to make a statement and then walk it immediately back. Okay.
I bet you $100 that one Snorlax deck makes top four.
Okay, is that actually your answer to the question? Like, you'd be willing to bet $100?
Something like, I'm like in that, I'd have to think about it a little bit more, but I'm in that ballpark. Snorlax is the deck I'm most confident in.
JW, how about you? Go.
Yeah, I'd bet, let's see. I mean, certainly Chen Pao will make top eight. I would put, yeah, hundreds of dollars.
Hundreds. Specify the number of hundreds. Because we gotta relativistically measure this against Andrew's confidence.
$300. $300.
Okay. Yeah. So you're like thrice as confident as Andrew.
Yeah. I mean, I'm confident. I don't have the money right now. I mean, I do have the money, but like, I would go higher if I was employed.
Okay.
I'd say
$1,000. If you got like a $200 stimulus from the gambling app, would you put that plus 300?
Right. Yes. Yes, I would.
Okay.
$200 stimmy.
Yeah, the first bet is free.
You get $200 down. Yeah. Well, $200 worth of credits.
Oh, right, $200 worth of credits, and then I would spend all my credits.
Picking a tournament winner for EUIC seems really difficult.
Yeah.
It's such a wide open thing.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, and how many people do you think bet Arceus, Duraludon, Vulpix?
Right. Like, that's why I'm kind of gravitating towards, like, I'm pretty confident I can nail down, like, a couple of decks that I feel like will be in top eight. You know, I'm confident there'll be a Charizard in top eight. I'm confident there'll be a Snorlax in top eight. Those would be two things that I feel pretty sure of. A Snorlax and a Charizard in top eight. You know, outside of that, like, there's a lot going on in this format, and I really expect it to kind of, the things that start to unravel and show up at EUIC. It's going to be the tournament that helps define our format, right?
Yeah, totally. It's the tone setter, you know?
Yeah.
The first post-rotation format. Yeah, I feel that. No, so you're off the Dino box then.
Oh, lordy. I played it on stream for a little while today. I lost both matches I played against Control. I won some, which was nice. I did get bodied by a Lugia, who went first and just set up turn two, which felt bad. I disconnected versus a Charizard, and I really wanted to see how that matchup was going to go, but TCG Live just froze. So that was sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get to see that outcome. The deck felt cool. It felt cool. It was fun to play. I liked a lot of what I had going on. I didn't get to play against any Lost Box decks, which I feel like are like the deck's great matchup. You know, I did play against a Turbo Iron Hands deck, and that felt kind of sketchy, even with the Slitherwings in there. It still felt tough, because at the end of the day, you're kind of just still trading two for two, which is like not great. If they can just keep their momentum going, then they will win that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's I think the Dino Box deck is not bad. I'm still going to continue comparing it to Reggie's. I'd expect a Dino Box to top 32, like one or two.
Yeah, it feels similar to Reggie in a lot of ways. I feel like Reggie had a little bit better of meta posturing, so to speak. Like, the way Reggie interacted with the meta, to me, feels stronger than the way Dinobox interacts with this meta, even if they're functionally similar. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but the problem with Dinobox is that you have no, like, aggressive option. You struggle in that early game to, like, you'll never donk an opponent.
Well, some of them are playing the Orin Mini X's.
I guess, but that's just so. Maybe. I don't
you
know.
Still man, not there's certainly other that, brews. Yeah.
With
yeah,
Reggie's, yeah. though, you're like, you could put on like very serious pressure from that first turn of the game. You're not really doing that with Dino Box.
And that's Reggie didn't get it first difference. Turn that often, though.
Sure, they did. I mean, even like a 120 snipe, you know, with the Regilecki.
Most of the time, they're like Regigating turn one. Come on.
Okay, well, sure. But I mean, still, even like you're one-shotting things. Based on weakness from
well, that's what I'm saying. Like the Reggie deck had better meta posturing because it was hitting things for weakness. Yeah. It was, yeah. It had the Regigigas to swing into VMAXs for tons of damage.
I mean, to counter that, Dino Box has got darkness. Okay,
no,
hits darkness type for weakness, or hits a darkness weak Pokemon for weakness. It's got the Flutter Mane, which is really good against the Lost Box decks. Okay.
What's Dark Week?
The Iron Crown.
The Crown, it's on the bench, bro.
You played four counter catchers.
So you're going behind so that you can one shot.
Yeah, but then you're gusting the crown, deck. And then they're just going to take two more
and
prizes.
And then you got the Slitherwing. You can hit Fighting Weak Pokemon for weakness, like Arceus and like. Iron Hands. It's not that bad, no, bro.
I get what you're saying. It's just like it's not quite the way Reggie hit like every meta deck for weakness on their main attacker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yep. So just, I don't know. The intangibles are the problem with the Ancient Box deck because you're never finishing games quickly. You're just not gonna finish games quickly. So if you lose in that first game, that's a 30-minute game because you're playing a single prize deck.
Period.
That's it. Like you miss sequence towards the end, or you miss an energy attachment, or you get Iono to one and you don't have that follow up attacker. Like you just get bodied because you played this huge, you know, this one prize deck that took a little while to get going. Does have high upside, but just doesn't have the intangible of being able to close out games.
Just like Reggie's. But Reggie's had gift energy, right?
No, so
like
that Reggie's, was
the
nice
thing. Like Reggie's had the gift energy
different.
At the end.
Reggie's a little
no,
different.
No, but like
though.
Reggie's, it took forever. The Reggie's games, if I was playing against Reggie's at a regional championship and I won a 30-minute game one, I was like, woo! Like there's nothing they can do, baby. There's nothing they can do.
They can swing it back to a tie, though. Maybe a little more viably than Ancient Box could.
Yeah, maybe so. I would agree with that, too.
Because I feel like when Reggie's in, like, commanding positions, it would just really run you off the table.
It's true.
You know?
Dino Box, it feels like you win every game by one prize.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Every
so
single
if game. Anything
Reggie,
goes wrong,
like,
you're
Reggie could win by, like, three prizes. You know?
Yeah, they and Dino Box cannot do that. Like, pretty much cannot do that. Yeah.
I will say the one consistent that I've seen on these online tournaments has been Chen Pao, backing up kind of the statements that I've had throughout this initial part of format development. And then another deck that I've seen do well that I don't quite understand how is Future Box, because that
well,
deck
I was
going like
to say that as well.
Garbage. It feels horrible. That deck like should not exist. I think it's terrible.
Oh my God.
I think there's the Iron Hands version that is awful. I do not get that. Like the straight lightning
is a
horrible, horrible, trash, F-tier, terrible deck.
Dude, you're just being inflammatory for views. This is nuts.
It's kind of sick. I'm here for it. All right, continue. No.
But the other Future Box that's kind of like Rainbow Box.
It's cool.
That I
you
can
like
get
it?
Behind. That one's kind
of
sick.
You're a little fan of it?
I'm a little fan of it.
Yeah. I don't know. Future Box
what's
is
sick?
F-tier, man. Future Box
what's
is,
so
is performing.
Sick.
Go ahead.
What's so sick is that like I made the prediction that Future Box was better than the Ancient stuff with my set review. I put it in the title, everything. I rated the Future stuff super highly. I rated the Ancient stuff
really
terribly.
I feel like that was so obviously true.
And then I got... Well, and then... You know, results from Japan started pouring in, and I got really cold feet. I was like, oh, boy, maybe I'm wrong. Oh, God. Right? And I was like, oh. So, but I stayed, you know, I stayed the course. I kept the title up and everything. And it was like, you know, Future is cracked, Ancient is whack, right, was the title of the video. And now I think it's – and I even was like, okay, well, I'm going to really invest in this Ancient Box deck and kind of see if it's, like, the truth, right? And I think, like, I'm coming to the conclusion that – it's not. And sure enough, like the Future decks are actually doing well in these early online tournaments. So I think, like, maybe I've come full circle and I'm like, all right, yeah, the future stuff's kind of broken. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the future stuff is... It's got a lot of good stuff in it. You know, it's got a lot of cards with good text on them, which is something the Agent Box does not, for one. So that's good. You know, GW, I think the future box is showing up just as, if not more, than Jedbao, to be honest. You know, you click through.
Yeah, but that's shiny deck syndrome. Like, if you look
Sure. I'm just saying, you were like all on your high horse about Tenpao showing up in these online tournaments.
Chenpao is converting more. It's doing much better overall as an archetype.
Well, you can make the inverse of that argument too, though, right? That people aren't playing the future box deck to like good lists or optimally, whereas Chenpao is like kind of a known quantity. You know, you could play these games all day, bro.
You can't make that argument.
My bad. I forgot that you can't do that.
Yeah. What are you thinking? No.
Good job checking me on that, for real. Seriously. Yeah,
of course.
I think the future has a lot of potential. The Iron Hands deck does feel a little bit, I don't know, it's like teetering on the edge for me. Like, it feels like there's something there, but it's also, you know, you get something with that just the wrong HP threshold that trades into your hands, and you're just like, what am I even doing? You know, like, what is the point of my life? So I don't know. Using that Maridon, though, feels good. So
yes.
No, Maridon is trash. Oh my gosh,
dude! You know how good it feels to like turn one KO like a Mander and accelerate multiple energy into play. You're nuts.
If turn one KO what?
Like a Charmander. Charmander.
Oh yeah. My god! And then guess what I do? Maximum Belt, Rare Candy, Charizard. Boss up your, you know, Iron Hands.
All right, play a little bit more of this format, bro. That is not happening. Let's see.
Yes, dude. That's how every game goes. Either I'm playing the Future Hands deck, or I'm playing Chenpao. That's like literally how it goes. Charizard is like getting there. Like, they can do some crazy stuff on their turn two. The deck is trash. If you get the first Iron Hands knocked out that you accelerate to, then you lose.
There's the baton.
The deck falls apart.
You got the baton, man.
Okay, so you're telling me you're playing two baton, and then you're gonna find it when you need it, and I'm not gonna have Lost Vacuum, and like, it's just crazy, man. You guys are insane. This deck is trash.
I can't wait.
The only thing saving this deck is that it's big guys. It's just big guys, okay? And they're all basic big dudes, big
That's
fellas.
That's a tried and true strategy.
It's a tried you and true strategy. That's the guys. Only thing. That's the only thing saving it.
You love the big guys deck.
Dude, I love the big guys, but man, I can't. This is unforgivable.
Unforgivable.
No. All right. Well, I think we certainly have a lot of testing to do between now and next week.
Seriously.
And I really look forward to seeing what information our testing yields in the week ahead. We'll have to update our apps, our counterplay.gg apps.
That's right. Everybody, check the App Store.
No, it's not on the App Store yet. I know. I need to work on my React Native.
Well, this is more for the upcoming app. As well.
Oh yeah, check out the gambling app to check out the spreadsheet app.
Yes, for sure. I think that this is a good place to stop. We seem to be getting fired up. We could probably go for another 30 minutes, but we got to save some for next week as we gear up for EUIC. I think this was a very nice episode. We got really covered a good range of topics and got to kind of touch on some things that we don't get to talk about every week. So that was cool.
And you know what, listeners? I hope you all have a lot of fun this week. Seriously. Enjoy playing Pokemon cards.
Seriously.
Amen, bro.
Even if that's future, seriously, like, have a good time.
Yeah, even if you have, like, three Iron Hands in your deck, just have a good time. So, if you want to get more plugged into the Tag Team ecosystem, you can follow us at Tag Team Pokemon on X. Follow me at Real John Walter, at Enjoy Friend for Andrew Mahone, and at Smiles with Riles for Riley Holbert. That's going to do it for today's episode, everyone. We'll catch you next week.
See ya.